from St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking. Hi, everybody. This is Jason Rosenbaum, a politics correspondent with St. Louis Public Radio. If you've followed the Missouri General Assembly for as long as I have, you probably know that the Senate possesses what I'd like to call a strong filibuster. If a senator or senators can physically remain standing and talk on the floor, they can bring business in the chamber to a screeching halt. This strong filibuster not only provides more power to the outnumbered Democratic Party, but it also makes Senate leadership weaker, especially when GOP lawmakers are engaging in a talkathon. Congressman Eric Burleson used to be a member of the Missouri Senate, where he was part of what was known as the Conservative Caucus. That group often filibustered their own party's legislation, oftentimes to get language changed or concessions granted. And the Greene County Republican contends this type of filibuster should be brought to the U.S. Senate, where a filibuster doesn't require any expenditure of physical energy, but just a simple motion. I spoke with Burleson last week about why he thinks this change would be good for the federal legislative process and whether his fellow conservatives' recent embrace of the talking filibuster is more about practicality than principle. Here's my conversation with Representative Eric Burleson. Why do you think that what is known as the talking filibuster would be better than the current way the filibuster is done in the United States Senate?
That's a great question. So, you know, just from experience being a state senator, you know how it works. And it is a painful process for both the majority party and for the minority party. In fact, when people ask me, I will say all the time, the worst, probably the most grueling political job I ever had was being a state senator, because you often are working late into the evening, sometimes even into the early morning. Sometimes it continues into the next day. But a lot of times, that's the only way to get anything of substance done. And what happens is it causes a real debate to occur. And while people are going through the process of having to stand on the floor and talk, they usually have a surrogate in the back room negotiating. And you don't always get what you want, but sometimes you use the rolling sun, you can get what you need, right, out of that. And so it often sparks negotiations, and sometimes those negotiations return a better product. Sometimes it's a little bit watered down, and it's not as much as you get wanted, but at least you're able to get something. But that's what we're facing right now in the U.S. Senate is a group that has, according to tradition, and this is not according to rule, people are often getting this confused, that they have to change the rules in order to do a talking filibuster. It's really just their tradition. They have not, for quite some time, decades and decades, they have not moved to the debate. And as a result, they end up just saying, well, since we don't have 60 votes, in other words, we don't have enough to do a PQ, then we won't proceed to debate on this topic. And as a result, no one actually stands on the floor and physically does the hard job of filibustering.
As I'm sure you know, and I'm sure most of the people listening to this know, but in case people don't know, in Missouri, a filibuster can be broken if a majority of senators vote on a previous question to force a vote on something. In a talking filibuster scenario, could a filibuster just be broken with a majority vote, or would it still need to be 60 votes under your vision of what the talking filibuster would be?
Yeah, according to the rules, you can break the talking filibuster with a vote of 60 votes on the U.S. Senate. In addition, in Missouri, you can talk as many times as you wish. So if you've got four or five people, they can take turns until the cows come home. But in the U.S. Senate, those senators are limited to only being able to speak twice. So in the moment that they, rest their hand on their desk or do certain things, it's all depending upon what the clerk has been instructed to do, or the person that's presiding, they can actually end that debate if the senator has stopped talking or if they've rested. So I would have welcomed those kinds of rules whenever I was in the Missouri Senate. In fact, most of the state senators, I was at a conference this weekend with a lot of former Republican state senators that are now congressmen, who were pushing back, letting the speaker know that that's not how this is going to work. What's ironic, Jason, is you have a lot of lawmakers, state lawmakers, who have more knowledge about the U.S. Senate and their rules and how it would actually carry out, because we've done it. We've actually done the talking filibuster, and the U.S. senators have not. Now, we've got Eric Schmidt, who I think they should probably be leaning on more than anybody, because he knows how that works very well. He did that for 8 years.
Yeah. And so just to be clear, and I don't know the U.S. Senate rules as much as I do the Missouri Senate rules. You can't do what happens in Missouri, where one person is talking to another senator and that person is like, well, I'm going to go now, Senator. You can now talk for 2 to 4 hours. Like, you can't do that in the U.S. Senate, because I could just imagine if you could do that, and there's 47 Democrats, and granted, some of them are very elderly and probably can't talk for very long, you could probably hold the floor for weeks, if not months, based off that, especially if you get two turns to speak. Can you clarify that point? I understand that might seem like minutia, but I think it's actually pretty important if we're going to be talking about how this is actually going to play out.
It is. And I don't know about if they have the ability. On the federal level, they call it a colloquy, where you're talking to another person. You're not just talking on your own. I'm not sure if that's the case, but I think that it really doesn't matter, because the person holding the floor only gets two swipes or bites at the apple. In Missouri, you get an unlimited number of times. So I do think it is different, and the minority doesn't have as much power as the minority does in the Missouri Senate, is my point. And I also think what will be good is that you have a topic that people are kind of hiding from, and that will suddenly be in the spotlight. So you've got, and that will be in the spotlight for both Republicans and the Democrats. The topic that they're debating is a righteous cause, and it polls at like 75% or 80%. And so when you see a senator, I think that there's a lot of Democrat senators that are not going to want to put their neck on the line on this and go out and filibuster, because it's such a popular topic. You're also going to have, those Republicans who are hesitant to actually be there for a roll call because of the physical torture that it is. They're going to, all the spotlight is going to be on, let's say, for example, Murkowski and Collins don't show up for a roll call. Their base, or their voters, are going to ask the question, why are you not doing your job? You're not showing up for a roll call. Just at least be there. I think the dynamic is something that could potentially get something done or break in the logjam, as opposed to getting nothing, which is what we're getting right now.
Okay, one more process question. So when you say that under this scenario, a senator could only speak twice, are you saying that if we're talking about the SAVE Act here, that's what you were referring to, are you saying that
Save America Act.
Yeah. Are you saying that every Democratic senator could potentially speak twice on that bill indefinitely? Because again, if that's the case, they could hold the floor for weeks, if not months, if they really were serious about blocking this. And that would mean no nominations, no passage of uncontroversial legislation. Maybe you have a scenario like in Missouri where they temporarily shelve it and then try to go back to it. Can you clarify that point? Because if it's every Democratic senator gets to speak twice, they could hold the floor for a really long time if they really wanted to.
Right. Well, first, as you know, in Missouri, often there's only, while you may have 20 Republicans, if the Republicans are filibustering something, you don't have all 20 stepping up to the plate to filibuster. You'll have a fraction of that. And I think that that would be the case on this issue, particularly because it's a very popular topic. And when the public is watching their member have to stand on the floor and just even talk about this, I think that this is a losing issue for them. The other thing I think is that at the end of the day, it is a painful process. And it will, and what it will do, as you know as very well too, is that you'll start seeing negotiations that will be about the bill itself, as well as all of the other package of bills, whether they're the must-pass bills of the FISA or the water bill, the road surfacing bill, all of the bills that are kind of in the hopper that really must pass this year, that will all start getting negotiated. At least that's how it would work in the Missouri Senate, right? As you close in on the end of session, you start building a package and building an agreement because people don't want to go back to the painful process of having filibusters on each and every one of these things. So deals are struck, but at least things start moving.
I want to make clear before I ask this next question. I think you're completely sincere in wanting a talking filibuster, and even several prominent Democrats in Missouri, like Senator Stephen Weber of Columbia and former Senator Jeff Smith of St. Louis, they support using the talking filibuster for the reasons that you mentioned, because it often prompts compromise when it comes to legislation that no one is really happy about, but it allows for actual stuff to get done. But I'm going to be brutally honest here. I have seen a lot of social media commentators on the right basically say that the talking filibuster is going to be a magic wand that is going to make it easy to pass the SAVE Act. And as we've kind of discussed, I think that's the farthest thing from the truth. I think it would make it easier, obviously, than the current system, but it will be an extremely painful process that could have collateral damage to it. So I know you might be hesitant to criticize people of your own ideological stripe, but would it be fair to say that if there is a talking filibuster, you will not necessarily see the SAVE Act passed exactly in this form super easily?
That's exactly my point. That's exactly the point I'm making, is that right now we're confronted with getting nothing. And what I think will happen, and this is, I was in a conversation with at a strategy session with Senate staffers and senators in the room, and I bluntly said to them, you know, everyone is wrong about what is going to happen, because no one has actually gone through these motions in decades. And I said, I explained to them what will actually happen is that the majority and the minority will quickly want to find an exit ramp. I mean, the moment you start a filibuster, it's so much more painful, especially as the hours drag on, and everyone's going to be looking for the exit ramp. And in order to do that, the minority, the Democrats, they're going to be wanting a win, and you'll have to find a win to give them, right? But at least something is going to pass.
Yeah, not to interrupt, but like an example of this would be like, I know there's part of the SAVE Act that says you have to have prove your citizenship with a passport or birth certificate. Maybe the compromise is, and I'm not saying that this will happen, you give everybody in America a free passport, and that's the way you show your citizenship. But that's an example of them coming to the table to compromise. Continue.
That's exactly right, Jason. That's exactly what will happen, is that you'll have, and honestly, a lot of the times, it may make the bill a little bit better. If everyone's trying to make the process better, sometimes you'll get a win-win situation. Sometimes you may have to water down the bill, but at least you'll be able to get something done. And that's what, whenever I said that to these Senate staffers and these senators in a room, they actually started buzzing about it and saying, you know, Burleson's probably right. This is not something, a dynamic that we can kind of physical toll that this is going to and the kind of compromise it's probably going to force.
Senate Majority Leader John Thune has poured cold water on the idea of a talking filibuster, saying that the votes aren't there to make it happen. He also pointed out that a talking filibuster would allow Democrats to place unlimited amounts of amendments on a bill. You probably have read Leader Thune's statements on this. What's your reaction to that?
So to me, it's all in the hands of Leader Thune. What he may be saying, and I don't know exactly what he means when he says the votes aren't there. He may mean that they don't have the 60 votes for the cloture, or he may mean I don't know that I can get 51 members to hold a quorum. I think he's got 51 members. In fact, just yesterday or the day before, Senator Cornyn flipped on this issue and said that he now supports the talking filibuster. I think Tim Scott from South Carolina did the same thing. So I think they've now gone past the point of having 51 senators that would that are supportive of the talking filibuster. But even if they didn't, I go back to my other point. If all it takes for them to begin is for Thune to basically proceed with the debate. If that does not require a vote, they don't need 51 people to proceed to debate. It's just an instruction from the clerk. So it's based on the president's decision. So he alone is the one that can proceed to debate. Once they're in debate and the Democrats are filibustering, then they could call for a roll call. And if that roll call occurs, then all the Republicans are put on the spot. And the public is going to ask Susan Collins or Lisa Murkowski or whomever, why are you not showing up for a roll call vote? That will be the spotlight that will flush out whoever needs to be flushed out. And if they don't show up for a roll call vote, then they can face their voters for that. But at least Thune tries or would have tried.
I do have a specific question about the SAVE Act. President Donald Trump has said he wants to include a ban on transgender athletes participating in sports that are not aligned with their gender identity in this bill. This is just my Missouri legislative antenna going off, but if that was done in the Missouri legislature, that bill would be struck down so quickly on multiple subject violations that it wouldn't even be a question. I understand there's not a similar multiple subject prohibition in the U.S. Constitution, but why are both Republicans and Democrats, and I'm going to call Democrats out on this too, because they do this when they're in the majority. Why do they do multiple subject bills like this so much? Because it really just seems dishonest and bad for the process.
Yes, I agree. Coming from Missouri, I really like single subject bills. And I like the fact that we have germaneness rules, but there's nothing in the U.S. Constitution regarding the titling and sticking to the title or the germaneness of any kind of amendments that are added to a bill. So a bill could be anything and everything, and because of that, and as you know, if you give lawmakers room to do something, they're going to use every inch of the space that they can. And that's just the dynamic. So until the Constitution is changed and requires single subject germaneness, then it's probably lawmakers are going to use every inch.
That was Congressman Eric Burleson, who represents Missouri's 7th Congressional District. You can follow all of our coverage of Missouri, Illinois, and St. Louis politics by going to stlpr.org. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, and thank you for listening. Politically Speaking is produced by Sarah Kellogg, Rachel Lipman, and me, Jason Rosenbaum. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts. From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.